Hello everyone.
Welcome back.
Welcome back to Espresso Epilogues. My name is Arifili.
And my name is Aspa.
And today we're here with an episode on our favorite Donna Tartt.
The one and only.
So in this episode, we're going to do a deep dive on Donna Tartt in general, and especially on the secret history, and also a little bit on the Goldfinch.
Little disclaimer, we will be covering in depth the secret history. So just letting you know, you don't want any spoilers, this episode might not be for you, but make sure to check it out when you are done reading The Secret History.
And also, we wanted to say that since our last episode, our TikTok has blown up from 0 to almost 4,000 followers, which has been insane. So we wanted to say thank you to all of the many new listeners that came from TikTok. We're so happy you're here, and we hope you like this episode.
Thank you so much. Look forward to doing so many more episodes like this. Yes. Deeper dives. We look forward to having you on board. Yeah. Thank you again.
Get a coffee and come talk about literature with us. So, Donna Tartt, I'm so excited about this episode because I truly believe wholeheartedly that she's a genius and one of the best writers of her generation.
Agreed.
She writes prose and characters and stories in a way that I haven't encountered before. She's so unique. And whenever I read The Secret History, you know, again and again.
Again and again.
I'm always amazed at how she can craft these sentences and these scenes. For example, I try to read it from the perspective of a writer, you know, to learn from her craft, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me feel like, wow, this is kind of unattainable. Like, all of her sentences are so meticulously crafted, and her attention to detail is unprecedented.
She's very gifted. Yes. She's very gifted. The fact that there is clear inspiration from her work, from ancient Greece, from Dickens, from Mark Twain, as a matter of fact, but she's able to keep it original in her writing and in her storytelling, I think is the works of a true genius.
I agree.
This is a bit funny, but do you think she kind of looks like Cillian Murphy? like a female version of Cillian Murphy? I think so.
I've never thought that. Well, we love Donna Tartt and we love Cillian Murphy.
We love Cillian Murphy too, so.
Love that. And so, The Secret History took her 9 years to write, which I think means she started when she was around 19. I could be wrong, but something like that, which is absolutely insane if you think about it. And she said before that her very slow speed of writing, she's tried to change that and she's tried to write faster, but she just didn't enjoy it. And I mean, we're all the better for it because she releases one book every 10 years, but it's perfect. And I mean, that's the work of a very true perfectionist, I suppose. And like, it's fine, girl, if it takes you 9 years, we're gonna be here to wait for the next one.
Absolutely.
Take your time.
Did you see that episode where the interview she did, where the interviewer very bluntly asked her, would the writing get faster with effort?
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
That is just, you cannot rush a genius, right? You cannot
good
force
art takes
a
time.
Timeline.
Exactly.
You cannot put that pressure onto someone who's writing a specific way.
Exactly.
And Donna Tartt bluntly said, this is how my work is made.
Yeah, like, I'm not interested.
I'm interested in enjoying the process, so.
Absolutely.
Praise
yeah.
her for that.
I love that. Like, she also writes for herself, obviously. And this is so annoying because she has done very few interviews only to promote her books when they come out. Mm-hmm. Two of her longer interviews have been with the same interviewer who kept interrupting her. One was in 1992 and one was in 2013. And I'm just like, please let the woman speak. Like, we really want to hear what she has to say. It's so valuable. The way she speaks is also so, like, it really draws you in.
It does.
I think she's very charismatic in a way. Like, especially when you see her 1992 interview and she's talking about her process and mm-hmm. she's kind of so excited about the reception of The Secret History and found it so unexpected. I think it's very interesting to watch her. And that's why I'm like, please let her speak. Like, we want to hear what she has to say.
It was frustrating because not only was there the interrupting, but there was the interrupting and complete change of subject. And
yeah,
it's like, this
exactly.
woman is running us through her thoughts and they're so fruitful. I want to hear everything this person has to say.
I agree. And before we started recording, we were talking about how there's this little anecdote about how when she was at university, and I think she was 18, her writing professor from university said that she was just a rare genius, a literary star. And I think it's fascinating to see how her work has progressed and also to hear her own very rare perspective in these interviews about her creative process and what inspires her and all the references she might have included into her works that a lot of people just don't notice because there's so many. Like, she's extremely well read, and the attention to detail is just insane. Like, I feel like you could never fully deconstruct The Secret History.
Right.
Should we go into The Secret History?
I would love to.
Let's do it. So, The Secret History, which I'm sure a lot of our listeners have read already because it's such a classic. It's crazy, first of all, to think of how it was published 30 years ago, and it's topping the charts today. That is a true classic.
It was in the popular book section, I think, at our local bookshop, wasn't it?
Yeah, and we're in Athens, Greece.
We're in Athens, Greece, right.
And Athens tends to be pretty late on a lot of trends, to be honest. Like, a lot of popular books and things come here a bit later. I mean, now with TikTok, it's getting much faster, but
but it's a very clear contrast between the Colleen Hoover books and the classics, like The Secret History. But we're happy to see such a great piece of work being up there.
And also, I mean, side note, it's really interesting and fun to see how in Athens right now, a lot of the books that top the charts are like The Secret History and The Song of Achilles, etc. And it's great to see how people in Greece are reading and loving all of these books inspired by Greece in a large sense, or mythology that. Retellings.
It really does.
I love that.
I love that too. Yeah. It really brings me joy to know that.
So, The Secret History is such a perfect book in many ways.
I think for once, whenever I get into like a dark academia
vibe,
if you will, yeah, I immediately feel cozy. I think, ooh, fireplace, coffee, blankets,
murder
books.
Mystery.
Murder mystery. I think it's gonna be a cozy read. It makes me feel, it's immersive to begin with.
Yeah, it's very immersive, you're right.
What about you? What are your first impressions of the book?
I love how this book is a story, but how so much of it really makes you think. And I feel like you have to work a little bit to deconstruct some of its references. I quite enjoy that. For example, I loved the parts of the book where Richard describes Julian's classes. And I loved the setting. I was telling Aspa this before we started recording as well, how the setting of Julian's classes in The Secret History was so immersive for me. One of my favorite parts of the book, maybe, because I feel like I actually can't believe that I haven't seen, you know, like a movie of The Secret History because of how vivid it is in my head, the setting of these classes and of the university. But kind of like Julian's classroom with the flowers and their table and their little kitchenette. I love how immersive the setting was, but you don't even realize it happens. It just draws you in so well.
Right. No, I agree with you. Larry Feely and I had kind of like different ideas of what the classroom setting would be. To me, it was more of a, if you've seen Dead Poets Society, that kind of classroom, a more classroom in a sense, whereas for you, it was more like a foyer. Like a place of intellect and thought.
Yeah.
Which, in all honesty, I think you're closer to it, but because I thought of a university, that's immediately where my mind went to.
Interesting.
My philosophy halls in university look like the ones in Dead Poets Society.
No way.
So that's why immediately my mind went to that. That's how my mind created the classroom.
Today I was really reminiscing about philosophy classes I had in high school. It was such a small group, and I remember, you know, like misty mornings, just cold early mornings where I would start with 2 hours of philosophy, and I had a great teacher, so it was so like a very beautiful and inspiring setting, and it got me to love philosophy so much. And then I did philosophy in university as well as a minor, but that was a bit different, still nice, but you know, just this classroom setting of discussing all of these extremely interesting topics is so inspiring to read and get immersed into.
Right. I think philosophy, on a different note, is a difficult concept to grasp because you do have to have a certain amount of maturity, and that's why it's instructed to the last class of high school and university students. But I think it's something that we should all be pursuing, developing our minds, and it should be something that we take upon us to study.
I mean, some people don't like philosophy. That's fair and good as well, but I absolutely love it. I think it's very inspiring to try to expand your view on things so actively.
I agree on that. And there is very many different routes of philosophy.
Yeah, we're going to do an episode on that.
I guess we are.
Yeah.
New episode idea right there.
Because our TikTok followers responded very well to a couple of videos about existentialism and absurdism.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm super interested in that. Would love to talk about it at some
point. I would too.
So stay tuned.
For real.
But back to the secret history. I wanted to say that, first of all, I mean, a point that stands out a lot is that, of course, you know from the first page that there's a murder and you know who dies.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched a Donna Tartt interview where she was saying that in many Greek tragedies, you know what's going to happen from the start. And the story is less about what's going to happen than about how. It's more about the actions and their consequences. And she said that she was fascinated by how these tragedies could still create suspense in their audience, even when they knew what's going to happen. And she wanted to see how she could create that suspense herself by revealing the murder on the first page.
Right.
So from the start, she was like, I want this book to reveal the murder on the first page. I think it's a
genius.
Big part of the book.
It's genius. And as the inspiration for revealing the murder in the first page is, like you said, very relevant to ancient Greek tragedies.
And classics.
And classics, too. And, like, in the Iliad, when we find out first page what's going to happen. We don't know what led to that, and that's what keeps its hook, is we're wondering what happened. And that's fascinating.
Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of skill to write something like this. And I think it's great that Donna Tartt used some Homeric patterns in The Secret History, because obviously they work.
Me too.
These are great epic classics. So that's a great strategy to look up to. And we were watching a video by a YouTuber called Sabrina the Classicist, where she analyzes The Secret History.
From a classicist standpoint.
Yeah, which was super interesting.
And so beautifully crafted as well.
Shout out to Sabrina the Classicist.
Mm-hmm.
She pointed out how a very small Homeric reference, for example, was Henry appearing in Richard's dream after he died, which reminds of Achilles appearing in Odysseus' dream in the Odyssey. There are so many classics references in The Secret History that I'm sure we're missing so many tiny details, but I really love how these are so deeply, carefully interwoven in the story. So many little details.
Right, agreed. Did you catch that, like, the satire on the elitist?
On the elitist,
yeah,
aspect
the elitism
of the classroom?
Mm-hmm, that's what I thought as well.
Yeah, you want to give some thoughts about it?
I'd love to. The conscious decision to give the characters that are very exclusive and wealthy and privileged to have this horrific ending to
uh-huh.
their lives, to know that even though they do make it through, they continue to live suffering. It's almost existential to see.
Yeah, and it also reminds of tragic heroes being chased by the fury of the gods, right? Because
mm-hmm.
all of them have a bad ending. I mean, they're all dissatisfied or
right.
dead. So that was definitely intentional from the start.
It kind of lets you know that no matter what you do in life, actions have consequences.
Let's talk about the characters, because I feel like they're
mm-hmm.
the real highlight of the story.
Certainly.
I was really happy with how unique all of the characters were, and of course, with how easily all of them prove time and time again that nothing is just black and white. They play with morality and with human norms, and they challenge everything you would expect.
Mm-hmm.
And how can we come to, not love, but at least be drawn to a group of characters so deeply flawed, so peculiar, so sick in many ways, but then again so individual, so different, and probably quite impossible to grasp in their entirety. I think it's crazy how Donna Tartt can create characters that fit that description so well. Who's your favorite character in The Secret History? If you can have a favorite character among some that are all, in many ways, terrible people.
Julian?
Really?
Yeah,
interesting.
Julian. I would say Julian. I'll develop in that for a second, but tell me about yours. Who do you think is your favorite character?
Mine is Henry.
Henry. I feel sorry for Henry, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I can't. I was so drawn to Henry's character, maybe because of all of his contradictions.
Right.
Like,
good point. He's a very black and white kind of person.
He's very big and very imposing, but he's so quiet and calm.
He's struggling to fit in, he's struggling to find his way. Like,
yeah.
You know, after the murder, he's having such a hard time
yeah.
keeping it in. What did you think?
I think
Henry's character?
It was getting more and more glimpses of his personality as the book went along mm-hmm. that potentially you wouldn't expect. For example, at the beginning of the book, when Richard quite starts to like Henry, even though Henry has only spoken a few words to him, because he seems very quietly welcoming or acknowledging of Richard in a way. And for example, after in one of the first interactions they all have, where Bunny takes Richard to dinner and very conveniently forgets his wallet and expects Richard to pay, and Henry comes to the rescue, you know, and then Henry drives them both back to university
mm-hmm.
and he turns to Richard and he's like, "I'm so truly sorry." And he seems very genuinely sorry
oh,
that
right.
Richard is drawn into this. And I thought that's a very, it feels like a very
he's wholesome.
Soft side of
mm-hmm.
his personality that before that you hadn't seen at all. And
he's
then,
not a snob unlike the
yeah,
other ones.
Yeah, but he could certainly appear so because of how he's described and
right.
how when Richard would ask around on campus about him and the others, everyone would be like, "You want nothing to do with them, honestly."
Right.
Yeah. So I quite like the contradictions in his character. And, I mean, final note, I find it so funny that he was this extremely educated person but didn't know the moon landing took place. And there's, like, a funny scene where they're having dinner and he, like, puts down his fork and he's like, "What?"
Right.
Like, what, how did that happen?
Right.
Yeah, like, when?
See, these people are just so in their own world.
Yeah.
They're very much, like, their life is very centered around this elitism, this idea of them being part of the secret society.
Of course.
And it's so exclusive that they're so oblivious to the outside world.
Yeah.
Like, do you remember that scene when the twins and Bunny are bragging about going to Italy for the Christmas holidays? And
they're kind of out of touch.
Right.
In many
ways. Completely out of touch. And then
Bunny especially.
Richard sleeps in a unheated warehouse in the cold Vermont winter. And he gets, obviously, very ill from it. And he has no money to fly home, and he has no will to fly home as well.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys are just off in Italy skiing, drinking, having fun.
Yeah.
And he does get rescued by Henry, I believe, if I'm correct.
Mm-hmm.
Rescue him, take him to the hospital, let him stay in the dorms. But you can see how, like, out of, like, they wouldn't have even thought that that was the case unless they witnessed it themselves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it really shows you how, like, it's in your own world, and once you are at that level of status, you can choose what realities you want to accept and which ones you don't.
And of course, that ties into their whole messed up hobbies quite well.
Ooh.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know how we could get into that. But before we do, I'd love to hear what makes Julian your favorite character.
This is completely my interpretation of it, and
mm-hmm.
feel free to disagree with me, listeners, as well. But Julian, to me, kind of is the oracle. He almost has this godlike knowledge, and that's why he's so limited as to who he takes and how selective. It's almost as if, like, he's on a godly standard as opposed to the other characters.
That's so interesting.
And so I would have loved to have known more about Julian, but this character is underdeveloped through my perception.
Yeah.
Julian, to me, is also, like, a very Homerian influence, too. He's
mm-hmm.
the oracle. He is the knowledge.
And also, I loved how his character was built in general. He sounds so interesting and fun to read.
Mysterious is a good word.
And also a bit cheeky.
Cheeky, snobby, like,
yeah.
you can't do this. But I also think there's an element of, like, this is a test. He's like, you can't be part of this. But also expecting Richard to, like, prove me wrong. That is my take on Julian.
That's so interesting.
I definitely picture him as, like, an elderly man, like, holding a newspaper under his armpit.
And he was described as having a youthful face, even though a very clearly old face. And I think I can really envision that. Like,
when youthful face, I feel like youthful, like, in emotions. But I,
there's
that's
a
how
sparkle
I
in his eyes.
That's,
you know,
sweet.
That's
sparkle
how I
envision wisdom.
It. Yeah, absolutely. I really see him like that.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because he was much kinder and gentler when Richard met him than he expected.
Mm-hmm.
That whole aspect of his personality is really interesting to read. And then seeing the role he has over the others. He feels kind of like a mentor to Henry
mm-hmm.
in the way that Richard sees Henry, if that makes sense.
Oh, that's interesting.
They have a similar dynamic in a way. Do
right.
you see that?
I do. But then I also feel like Julian is the character that is the determiner of what happens, in a sense.
Yeah, I mean, definitely his influence.
He's very insanely influential.
Yeah.
And that's the point.
He gets them to think in such ways where they contemplate
everything
from beauty to living to human nature. And I think that's beautiful. And of course, it's just about seeing how that can take a dark turn.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I think that's twisted.
Yeah.
And that's the whole point of the secret history, right?
And next thing you know, you're having a bacchanalia with your besties.
Hey, making out with your twin.
Jesus.
Yeah, we'll get into that in a second.
Yeah. Charles and Camilla.
Ugh. I can't stand them.
Where do we even start?
I don't know.
First of all, I think that maybe Charles had the bigger contrast from how Richard thought he was at the beginning to how he actually was, because he turned out to be an alcoholic and abusive and a lot of bad things.
And Camilla was just aloof.
Yeah, and Richard romanticized Camilla a lot from the start.
Yeah, he had a crush on her.
Yeah, he's like, she's like an angel.
Yeah.
I think they're a very interesting duo because it shows you how Richard's narration is just his very limited way of seeing things and then how different things actually were.
Mm-hmm.
And he has this realization in a part of the book that, damn, now I'm tied with these people because we've committed a murder together and they're actually not great people.
Fascinating, to say the least.
Maybe Francis was the character that was the least developed, or I felt like he was, from the group.
Yeah. I think so too. I almost, when I was preparing for the episode, I almost forgot Francis was a character. You're right. I wanted to understand his motifs a little bit more because we do get a very good development on the twins and on Bunny, but Francis is a little bit left out. You're right.
And I think Richard sees him as this kind of exotic being. He always uses adjectives that show that he sees him as exotic, intriguing, mysterious.
Can we talk a little bit about the murder?
Let's talk
about
it.
The two murders, actually, as a matter of fact.
Yes. The farmer and Bunny.
The farmer. So I do think there's an element of, like, we're so untouchable, we can just do this. I think there's an element of, we're so careless, we can drink, we can party, and, oh, we'll kill someone too. Like, what's the difference? And that's definitely, like, an attack on the elite, because we've seen countless amounts of times of the elite getting away with murder. If anything, this is an incredibly relevant story.
And Bunny's murder...
Bunny's murder.
He was blackmailing.
And then he continuously, like, would ask for more and more to stop him from speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And he also, I think he did this out of fear.
So I guess one murder brought the other.
One murder brought the other.
And there's a very long stretch in the book of the funeral part.
Of Bunny.
Which I think is maybe even 70 pages. And a lot of people talk about that as kind of a boring section of the book. And it definitely was slow and less engaging. But
right.
I think... that was necessary in order for the group to deal with their grief and their emotions in some way, because they're so emotionally messed up.
They're so messed up and, like, oblivious at the same time, but also conscious of what they're doing.
I also think it's interesting to see how, of course, after Bunny's death, they all start crumbling under the pressure and they struggle with it. You can see how the strain takes a toll on them. And then it all just leads to... the character's destruction, in a way. As we said, none of them have a happy ending.
Right.
And the book ends with Richard recounting his dream with Henry, right?
Yes.
Where Henry kind of leaves him to contemplate his unhappiness, and it feels very fateful. It's like fate has caught up with you. It feels like, well, this is the story I had to tell and the consequences, and even if Richard doesn't have any insane downfall, like, you know, Henry committing suicide,
right,
it still feels like his whole life was fully determined by this. And so there's been some talk about whether The Secret History could ever be a movie, and I think it couldn't unless it was 6 hours long, honestly. Because
it would have to be a series, wouldn't it?
It feels like... it would be really, really hard for them to tell the story and convey the true essence of the book as it should be told. I kind of think it's probably not even worth attempting, because I think it's going to take from the story. And I think it's been said that Donna Tartt was unhappy with the Goldfinch movie adaptation, so I don't know if she would ever go for a Secret History movie as well. I haven't seen the Goldfinch movie, but I've just read the book. And I've heard that the movie is just kind of, you know, okay.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to have a Secret History movie, but I don't know how feasible that would truly be.
I would love to see it in a series. Some people have made some very interesting speculations about, like, who ideal cast members would be.
Oh, yeah, the fan casts.
The,
like,
fan casts
I always
are my
see
favorite.
Them on TikTok.
I love those.
Yeah, I mean, they're very immersive. Well, should we go into The Goldfinch?
Yes. You would probably lead that part because I haven't read it. So yeah. I'm just going to be your audience here. I just look forward to Donna Tartt's next publication.
Me too.
We don't know when that's going to be.
We hope it's this year or next year.
How long has it been since the release?
10 years.
10 years? It's coming up. It's coming up.
So The Secret History is just one of our favorite books of all time, and we could talk about it for hours. We haven't read A Little Friend, which is her other book, but I've read The Goldfinch.
I haven't read The Goldfinch, so you'll have to.
I really liked it.
Give me an introduction to it and a synopsis, hopefully.
So The Goldfinch is the story of a young boy, Theo, who lives with his mother, and he goes to a museum. I think it's inspired by the Met in New York. That's where they live. So they're in a museum and they're looking at some paintings, including a painting called The Goldfinch. And there's an attack on the museum and an explosion. And he loses his mom in the explosion. And that's not a spoiler. Mm-hmm. It's literally the premise of the book. So that happens. And Theo comes to steal the painting in a way, even though he's like 13 years old at that time. I don't want to spoil anything, but he is led to taking the painting with him. And the story then, the very long book actually, follows Theo's life as he grows up and he has this painting with him. It follows his relationships, and there are amazing, amazing characters in this book. And it follows him struggling with a lot of things, like grieving his mother and owning this painting that's presumed missing, which he tries to protect and carry along during his life, but he also doesn't feel great about having it, of course. It's kind of this magical object that his life ends up revolving around. But what I loved the most about it were the characters. Theo was a fun character. I'd say he had more personality than Richard, for sure, in The Secret History.
Oh, that's what I'm thinking of, like another Richard character.
As a narrator, yeah, no, Theo had more to say than Richard. Still kind of a quite apathetic character in many ways. Didn't do much. Mm-hmm. Kind of let life come at him in many ways. But still, I think, took initiative more than Richard. Anyway, so Theo was very interesting to read about. But my favorites were Hobie, who is a man that Theo ends up living with for a while. No spoilers, so I'm not going to get into it. But he was just such a wholesome, great character. Aww. I really, really loved reading about him. And also Boris. Boris was one of Theo's closest friends throughout his life. And their relationship was very, very interesting. And he was just such a unique character. I think he's played by Finn Wolfhard in the movie.
You're kidding.
I didn't envision him like that, but he is.
But, right.
And Boris makes the story so much more interesting because of the ways he guides Theo to making certain decisions. So anyways, the characters and their relationships are very interesting, but it's a super long book. It's almost 900 pages.
900 pages?
Yeah.
That's a commitment right there.
Yeah.
She's a mammoth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Donna Tartt really created a whole world with this one, and I honestly loved it. It's very different than The Secret History, but the setting, again, and the atmosphere is
similar.
Very immersive.
Is there really a lot going on in those 900 pages, or is it very reflective?
It could have been shorter, for sure.
It could have been shorter?
Yeah, yeah. It could have been shorter.
I mean, I can give you, I'll admit, like, some parts of Secret History, I think, could have also been shorter, but with 900 pages.
I mean, that's probably why The Goldfinch has turned into a movie, because
Because it could have been condensed.
It could have, yeah.
Okay.
And
would you recommend it?
Yeah, and of course it was very beautifully written, as Donna Tartt wrote it.
Needless to say.
Needless to say. So I think, you know, this book hasn't been as widely acclaimed by people as The Secret History, even though it has a Pulitzer Prize for Fiction, which, of course, is an insane honor. But I'd say if you love Donna Tartt and you haven't read it, give it a try, and let us know if we should read A Little Friend, because I've read a lot of reviews that say it's, you know, just not that good, so I haven't gotten into it yet, but of course, I feel like at some point I'll give it a try.
Alright!
But yeah,
Donna Tartt, I'm gonna write you a letter to thank you for your work. It's been life-changing.
So, these are our thoughts on Donna Tartt and The Secret History, and of course, as always, please feel free to send us your thoughts as well. Follow us on TikTok for a lot of hopefully relatable videos on a lot of random things.
And Instagram memes.
Yeah, Instagram memes. And we feel love free to message us anywhere.
Have a good cup of coffee.
Enjoy the rest of your coffee. Have a great day. Thank you for listening.
We'll be back soon.
Bye.